Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on the Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. A lot to talk about today. The aftermath of Hurricane Matthew. Cleanup is underway. The galaxy is on fire, as in the Samsung Galaxy. More information about that. How much sugar is in your favorite drink? You might be surprised, and probably not in a good way, I think. The Great Debate, Part 2. More information coming up about that, as well as some other headlines to get to on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on 101.3 KPCG. We have a live stream at kpcg.fm, also at thetrumpet.com, wherever you'd like to go for that. It doesn't matter to us, as long as you're listening. That's the main thing. TuneIn app, lots of places to go. Dwight Falk with you here today, and Grant Turgeon, who is excited and enthused after a Buffalo Bills win and a three-game winning streak that will propel you to the Super Bowl and great glory.
Yeah, they just keep on getting these ho-hum victories. Just keep on cruising.
Well, the Packers won, too, yesterday, which is the team I root for primarily. And I kind of had a double benefit because it was on during the debates. So I had a reason to – I was flipping back and forth. But but it was perfect, really, because I'd watched some of the game. I'd flip back during the commercials. And by the time it was time for the game to come back on, I'd had enough of the debate. So the timing worked out pretty well there for me. Personally, more information about the debate. We've got a couple stories about that coming up. And we'll take it easy, though, today. We're not going to get into it too much because, boy, how much can you take, really? It just gets to be, it gets to be a lot, especially this particular debate because it's been so volatile.
True. And in a way, I actually enjoy it because it is very entertaining. And Trump really went all out last night.
He did. He's a fighter, for whatever that's worth. Of course, over the weekend, there was the Hurricane Matthew. And it wasn't, I suppose, in some ways, as catastrophic as it could have been. But really, there has been a lot of damage. And it's easy to kind of forget about it and to move on. But people on the East Coast there are still having to deal with this. They say it looks like a war zone. This is from Newsweek. Florida cleans up from Hurricane Matthew destruction. I don't know what the exact death toll is. I've seen a couple of numbers. It's over 10. I've seen 20, I think, is the highest number. People killed in the U.S. And then, of course, Haiti's had almost 900 as a hurricane weakens now to a post-tropical cyclone. Officials in Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina had urged people along parts of a 600-mile-wide stretch of coast to evacuate. Some 2 million people were without power, and the streets were darkened miles from the coast as the long lines of cars snaked back along the roads into some of those towns to take a look at the damage and try to clean up. There's a real estate data firm, CoreLogic. They estimated the storm may have caused up to $800 billion in property damage along the U.S. coast. From the coverage that it got, which was sort of minimal after it came ashore, I wouldn't have thought the numbers would have been that high, but that is a lot of damage, $800 billion, they're estimating.
That is really huge. And they were advertising constantly during football the number to donate $10 just by sending a text. So I'm sure millions of people probably did do that because they need all the money they can get at this point.
Yeah, that's hits the insurance companies and hits everybody. That's a lot of cleanup there. Rescue crews are racing, even as we're on the air here, to reach as many as 1,500 people stranded at their homes in North Carolina after a levee broke. That's, of course, today, one day after Hurricane Matthew unleashed treacherous flooding and then moved out to sea. So, you know, for most people, we assume, like, okay, it's time to clean up and move on with life. But you got 1,500 people there still stranded. And they're trying to get to them because that levee broke. And so they're in kind of a life and death situation in some cases.
Yeah, to be stranded for, I don't know how long, probably a few days in some cases. That would be extremely frightening, and they're out there just holding on for dear life.
Some of those stranded were standing on the roofs of their flooded houses in Lumberton, south of Fayetteville, and about 70 miles inland, and so they're trying to get to those people, and hopefully we'll be able to do that today at some point. So lots of cleanup there, lots of course, unique personal stories, people coming back and finding that their homes have been pretty well devastated in a lot of cases. I saw one story where somebody, they put their car in their living room to try to keep it safe from the storm. I don't know how well it worked out, but I thought, well, if your house gets flooded, I don't know how that would be any better than leaving it outside. And if your house doesn't get flooded, you probably should have just left it outside. I guess they didn't have a garage. I guess they had to put it in the living room.
Well, for the people who are on their roofs, it seems like that putting your car in your living room wouldn't be too effective anyway.
No. So a lot of damage out there in that area. So hopefully our listeners online are okay, and a lot of power outages still, and kind of depends on where you are, how quickly they can get those back on. When we've had power outages here in Oklahoma, it sort of depends on where you are. If you're in one of those neighborhoods where most of the power lines are buried, it's a pretty quick fix to get everybody back up. But some places down further in the city where everybody's got an individual line to their house, a few years ago when we had a big ice storm, it took weeks to get those people back online because you've got to fix every single line, as far as what I understand of it. So it's funny, even in our neighborhood, the other side of the street got their power before we did, like a day earlier. And so they're having their lights on and all their stuff, and we're sitting there in the dark. I thought, why? Must be the way they have the line set up or something.
Yeah, it must turn from a minor inconvenience to just a major hassle, and then even a cause for anger when you see everyone else around you getting all their power back so soon.
Well, it was a double whammy because it was right around the Christmas season, and so the people across the road, they had like the big light displays, you know, and
so, light shining in your window while you're trying to sleep. That would be a perfect time to keep the power off.
It wasn't just that they had power and we didn't. They were really having power. They were using it to really.
No wonder you didn't have power. It was all going straight to their houses.
Yeah, they blew out our circuit. So that can be a real hassle for people. And I think, like we mentioned last week, if you've got to go to a hotel for a few days, or you've got to, you know, get food somewhere else for a few days, that can really add up. So not a good deal out there on the East Coast. Samsung, they've been having some problems lately. The Samsung Galaxy Note 7 phone, it just gets worse and worse for them. They've stopped the production of the phone now. They're putting the brakes on because the spread of the replacement versions of the device also burst into flames. So people were saying, look, I've got a bad phone here, I need a new one. They said, no problem, here you go. And then that one burst into flames as well. So now they're just putting a halt on the whole shebang there. So that'll be a problem for them. And a lot of people have Galaxy Notes. Those have been pretty popular phones, except for, of course, the bursting into flames part.
Right. Actually, one of the plane flights I was on recently told everyone who had a Samsung 7 or Note 7 or whatever it's called, they told everyone who had one of those to turn off their devices during the flight instead of having it on and accessing the in-flight Wi-Fi and all the other entertainment like that. Just turn it off. We don't want it to possibly set the plane on fire.
Yeah, it's somebody was kind of being funny about it. You know how when you send, like, say, an email from, if you have an iPhone, and the bottom always says, you know, send from iPhone or whatever. They should do one from the Galaxy Note where it's like fire on the bottom, like sent from my Galaxy Note, kind of half burned, and you can't quite read it.
Well, usually the fire emoji is a really good thing.
Yeah,
it means you're on fire in a good way.
Yeah.
Maybe they could just take advantage of that.
Yeah, you wouldn't want it to burst into flames during a sporting contest. People wouldn't know that. You know, you'd be yelling, "I'm on fire," and they'd think, "Oh, he's doing well."
Yeah.
No, literally, I'm on fire.
The boy who cried fire.
Yeah, right. a new child story about for this technologically advanced age. My phone's on fire, and they didn't believe him. So it's bad for them. It's gonna affect, of course, a lot of things, I'm sure, because there's a lot of money tied up in that, and those phones are expensive. So hopefully, if you've got one of those, you can. I don't know what they're gonna do, if they're gonna give people refunds, or you think they would have to do something, because that just. Just to save some face there for their company. Stuff like this can put companies out of business.
That's true. And the companies usually have to go into overdrive repaying customers who have been burned by the problems. I wasn't even trying to say that, but I was talking to someone recently who owns, I believe, a type of Volkswagen, and they recently went through that scandal with the carbon emissions when they were having tests. They'd put some sort of machine on it that would lower the emissions, take off the machine whenever it was sold, and it would go way above the emission level that it was supposed to. So he has one of those cars. He can send it in and get paid full value on a car that's a couple years old.
Oh, wow.
Hey, so pay is saying that you paid before you even drove it off the lot.
Yeah, but I guess it would make sense to do that. You might as well. Huh, interesting. Yeah, so we'll see what happens with that, with those phones. It's, you know, sometimes I have an iPhone. It's an older one, but it gets a little warm if I use it a lot, but never had that happen, thankfully. A lot of people really enjoy a little beverage in the afternoon, get a little coffee or something, a little special drink. How much sugar is in that drink? There's an interesting slide show that they've made here. It's from CNN. Paper reveals soda's controversial relationship with health groups. And so it's not just about soda. It's about a lot of different drinks that are out there. And they give you kind of a neat, pictorial explanation. They don't just tell you how much sugar's in it. They show you the equivalent. Like, here's a pile of Twinkies, you know, that type of thing. So they've got a few drinks here. It's kind of interesting to look at. If you like to drink Coca-Cola, a 20-ounce bottle, which is pretty common, of Coca-Cola Classic contains 65 grams of sugar, which is the same amount of sugar found in 5 Little Debbie Swiss rolls.
Delicious.
And the problem is?
Can't complain there.
Well, you know, it's interesting to look at this, though, because it's very easy to sit back and drink a bottle of something and not think too much about it, I suppose. But if you had that pile of, you know, those Little Debbies sitting there, and you ate that every day or a couple times a day, you know, it was like going to a restaurant and, you know, you go, let's say you get a burger and you say, well, I'll take a Coke too, which is common. What if, you know, instead of doing that, you said, yeah, I'll take that burger and then give me 5 of these, you know, Little Debbies as my beverage.
Well, people would think you're a glutton, probably. That's what would happen.
Yeah.
I was joking the other day with my brother, if we named our children after, like, Little Debbie, then Ho-Ho and Dum-Dum, all the other names are quite a bit less flattering and probably more accurate of what you're consuming.
Twinkie. If you had to name your kids what you're consuming, that would be...
Little Debbie, though, that's cute. The other ones are not quite as flattering there.
No, they're not. If you drink Pepsi, Pepsi's got a lot of sugar, too. 20-ounce bottle of Pepsi contains 69 grams of sugar. Each Little Debbie Swiss roll contains an estimated 13 grams of sugar. Same. So basically, if it's Pepsi or Coke, it's the same. It's like eating 5 of those Little Debbie Swiss rolls. Something to think about.
Have 5 with your bottle of Coke.
Double it up. If you prefer juice, Minute Maid 100% apple juice says the 15.2-ounce bottle contains 49 grams of sugar, which is about the amount of sugar in 10 Oreos. So it's interesting because it's easy to think, well, I'm going to go with a healthier choice here. I'm not going to have this Coke. I'll have this apple juice. And depending on what type it is. Now, of course, sugar occurs naturally in a lot of fruits. But sometimes it's very concentrated, or sometimes they add other things to it. One way or the other, it's a lot of sugar. So I don't know too many people that drink apple juice every single day, but if you do, that's about 10 Oreos per bottle.
Yeah, I've actually seen a big container of just pure concentrate before, and I took a bite of it. I don't know if that's even safe to do, but I had a bite of it, and it tastes like fruity ice cream. I mean, that's how sugary concentrate is. And when you put it in juice, that's just basically drinking fruity ice cream. That's how sweet it is.
Yeah, that's right. They had those frozen things that you could buy. Sunny D, the original, a 16-ounce bottle of Sunny D contains 28 grams of sugar. Each of these six, they have 6 Oreos there. They have a picture. So they say each of the 6 Oreos contains about 4.6 grams of sugar. So if you're going to have a 16-ounce bottle of Sunny D, it's like eating 6 Oreo cookies. Choose wisely. You thirsty or hungry?
Sunny D, though, I could always tell that was a pretty sugary drink.
Yeah,
anyway.
That
was kind of marketed as a less healthy juice drink.
Orange juice is a less esteemed younger cousin.
Except among the youth.
Except among the youth. Arizona tea, people enjoy that sometimes. Arizona green tea with ginseng and honey A 23-ounce can of Arizona green tea contains 51 grams of sugar, which is about the same as can be found in 20 Hershey's Kisses. Mm. So there's a fair bit in there, too. Kind of surprising, I think, on some of them, maybe.
That's sad.
Yeah. Lipton lemon iced tea, 32 grams of sugar in a 20-ounce bottle each. And then there's the same 12 Hershey's Kisses would be the equivalent, I guess. You never feel so bad about eating the Hershey's Kisses because they're little, but then you eat 100 of them.
They add up and you get colon cancer.
Never mind that. Red Bull, I don't know that anyone thinks Red Bull's a healthy option at any level, but...
Gives you wings, though.
It does. What does it do to birds? Gives them another set of wings?
Yeah, makes them a carob.
The energy drink, the Red Bull, three quarters of a cup of a generic brand Frosted Flakes. That's the amount of sugar you're taking in. 11 grams of sugar in those Red Bulls.
Frosted Flakes.
So there's of course, there's a lot of things in those. And the caffeine has been one of the big issues with younger people drinking quite a few and then having problems sometimes. So I think, I don't know, is there a warning on those for younger people? I know they had talked about it.
I really don't know.
I haven't.
Hopefully.
Yeah. It's you got to be careful with those. Energy drink, the Monster Energy drink, 16-ounce can of Monster Energy has 54 grams of sugar. It's about the same amount as found in 3.5 cups of Frosted Flakes. If you have Frosted Flakes and you put the Monster Energy drink in it as well, then you're going to be good to go for a while.
I've heard of some people who do put other things besides milk with their cereal, which just seems overwhelmingly sweet.
Yeah.
And like some people, a lot of people use chocolate milk on their cereal,
wow,
which seems kind of unbearable, actually.
You know, it's interesting, just from my personal experience, is getting a coffee, like, you know, from Starbucks or something. And when I used to have the put flavor in it, and it was very, I didn't notice it one way or the other too much. I mean, I knew it, the taste was there, but it seemed normal. And then at some point I thought, you know, I want to cut that out because there's a lot of sugar in that and that's just a lot of extra sugar. So I did, and I just went with pretty much no flavor in it. And then one time I went back and had one of the ones I used to have, and I couldn't believe how sweet it was. Like, I couldn't even drink it.
Yeah.
And I was amazed at how much my taste buds had changed. And I think that's what happens with people.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
you get used to it, and then you kind of need to up the intake to make it have that, you know, same sort of kick, I guess.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I wonder what people are trying to get from their cereal that they have it that sweet. I mean, are they looking for an all-day energy rush from cereal? Because that doesn't seem like the most likely of sources.
Yeah, I think people have gotten somewhat, maybe at least smarter. I don't know if it's changed habits, but people, I think, have gotten maybe a little smarter since I was a young person, a kid. And, you know, if you ever watched a show targeted at young people, that was targeting young people, cartoon or something, they'd always have the cereal commercials, and they'd always, you know, show it, and it was exciting and fun and everything, Lucky Charms or whatever was going on. And then at the end, they'd always say, part of your complete breakfast, you know, and they have, like, this big bowl of it, and then there'd be, like, a piece of toast on the side, and then a big glass of orange juice, and then a, you
banana.
Know.
Banana.
Yeah. And the sugar impact on that is unbelievable, especially when you're a young person, and starting your day off with that. And then, you know, you go to school and everyone's dead tired at 10. That's because the ups and the downs.
Crash, exactly.
Yeah. So, part of your complete breakfast. Milk has, of course, some sugar in it. Generic and skim milk. Of course, this would be, I guess, pasteurized. We're not talking about, like, raw milk from a cow here.
Yeah.
It's gone through some processes. An 8-ounce glass of skim milk has about 11 grams of sugar. A single Starburst candy has 2.7 grams, so this would be the equivalent of 4 Starburst. But there should be some value to the milk, I think. Not that sugar is bad. I mean, you do need it, but it's just it's so much in some things. Silk vanilla soy milk, a glass of that has about 8 grams of sugar. It's about 3 Starburst candies. If you're familiar with the Starbursts, Silk almond milk, 2 Starbursts, and juice smoothie. These naked—they're called naked drinks,
right?
The 15.2-ounce Naked Berry Blast has 29 grams of sugar, which is the equivalent of 8 Chips Ahoy cookies.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. They, you know, I guess there's some good stuff in those drinks. I don't know. The Bolthouse Farms Berry Boost, 24 grams of sugar, And that's the same with those Chips Ahoy cookies. So Gatorade, of course, a lot of sugar in that one. If you have a 32-ounce Gatorade bottle, it has 56 grams of sugar, same amount as found in 5 Reese's peanut butter cups. So there you go. That would be a new flavor for them. Powerade, Mountain Berry Blast, same thing. You're looking at 5 Reese's cups. Here's where it gets interesting for the older of us that like the coffees, I guess. Iced coffee, Starbucks iced flavored latte. So if you're getting a flavor in it, a grande Starbucks iced flavored latte with 2% milk and your choice of syrup has about 28 grams of sugar, the same amount of sugar in 2.5 Krispy Kreme donuts. So if you're enjoying just a grande, we're not even up to the big one yet. If you're just having a grande iced latte with flavor in it, you're looking at 2.5 Krispy Kreme donuts. I mean, it'd be really easy to drink one of those drinks. I do. But I don't think I would sit there and eat those donuts every day.
Right, that's true. I mean, they are very good, though. And especially when the hot light comes on, you can get one for free when you're driving past. But, it's quite a lot of sugar.
It adds up, and I think that's the thing. It's easy to drink stuff and not think much about it, but the sugar content adds up. Dunkin' Donuts takes it to the next level. 16-ounce Dunkin' Donuts iced caramel latte, 37 grams of sugar. That's a 3.5 Krispy Kreme donuts. So
it's funny that they wouldn't even compare the drink to their own type of donut. Dunkin' Donuts to Dunkin' Donuts. They do Dunkin' Donuts to Krispy Kreme donuts.
There wasn't enough room in the... Yeah, no, I don't know. So those are some of the more common drinks that are out there and some of the sugar content that's in it. So anyway, it's something to think about. I think a lot of people do try to avoid, like, say, soda on a regular basis or some of those other places, some of those other drinks. But sometimes, you know, there's a lot of sugar in ones that you don't think of as much about. So something to consider if you're trying to limit your sugar intake. Or if you want to increase it, now you know how to do that as well.
Yeah, these other drinks have to keep up with soda somehow. I mean, that's why people like soda so much, because of all the sugar and the spice that comes with it. So everyone else has to put those same addictive ingredients in their drinks.
You ever think about if you were trying to explain the taste of soda to somebody who had never had it? Like, what would you say about it? What does it taste like?
I don't know.
Fizzy? Sweet?
It tastes like some sort of... eventual disease.
I don't know. The flavor is hard to describe. Here's a pretty nice story about a Chicago Cubs fan. The Cubs are playing well, which that's a pretty rare thing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen too
often.
Before
last year, it was pretty much never.
Yeah. It says, like other Chicago Cubs fans, Loretta Dolan wasn't yet born in 1908, the last time her beloved team won the World Series. She's 102 now, though. And the lady who keeps score for every Cubs game is hoping this is the year her team seals the deal. She records everything down to the pitch count, has scorecards that go as far back as 1963. And that was the year when a Wrigley Field hot dog was 30 cents and a beer was 40 cents. So this is something people used to do a lot more. I don't think people do it as much anymore, but they used to listen to the games on the radio and they'd sit there and fill out the scorecard. Like some people, it was like a family tradition. I've read of that where the, you know, after work, dad and the kids would sit down and they'd listen to the game and they'd fill out the scorecards. And it was like a big thing. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done that?
No, but they do still hand those scorecards out in pretty much every game program of every ball game I've been to. So apparently they are expecting a decent number of people to actually be interested in doing that, at least for a few innings before they get bored of it and want to actually watch the game a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, it probably sounds incredibly boring to people of the newer generations, but this was really quite a thing. So she's been doing this for a long time. She's 102 now.
Wow.
And if a scorecard was not available, she'd just make her own. She had to miss a game, she'd rely on the box score in the newspaper to fill in the blanks. So, I mean, she's been really after this. She says, her daughter says, I've never seen her doze off during a game. So she listens to him.
102 years old.
Yeah.
I doze off during games constantly, probably a couple times a week.
Too much sugar.
Yeah.
Dolan celebrated her 100th birthday by throwing out the first pitch at a Cubs game, and 8 years before that, she also did the honors at Wrigley Field, which is strange because that's the same field they play in. So I'm not sure what they mean by that, but maybe she got to do it there twice.
Oh, okay.
I'm not exactly sure why they made that distinction, but Hey, I didn't write it. I'm just reading it. Dolan believes this could be the Cubs' magic year, and she has stayed loyal this long because the players keep smiling, she says. She says, you know, when they get up to bat, they haven't got an angry look. They smile. They get up like they're going to do their jobs. And I think that's what keeps me going with them. I certainly hope they win. So that's an interesting take from a lady that's 102 years old. The Cubs play the Giants in San Francisco Monday evening tonight, 8:30 p.m. Central Time, Game 3, the National League Division Series. The Cubs, who have not won a World Series since 1908, lead the best of five series 2-0. The Giants, meanwhile, are looking to keep alive their recent streak of winning World Series titles in even years. San Francisco has won it all in 2010, 2012, and 2014.
I'm expecting some magic from them.
It's a the comeback. They have been very resilient team over the years, so we'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm not a Cubs fan necessarily. Well, I'm not at all. But there is something there where you're like, wow, you know, it'd be nice to see them win something. It's been a long time.
Well, I would have to tell you, none of the two Buffalo teams I like have ever won, and neither has the Seattle team I like. So there are some teams that have never won ever, even though it hasn't been a 100-year gap in their whole entire team history. They've never won.
Yeah.
So I think they deserve more sympathy or more scorn, actually. I think they deserve scorn after all this time.
It's one of those things where those teams kind of become, they call like the lovable losers. Yeah. You know they're not going to win, but it's your team. You're going to go with it anyway. This next one is from our favorite, of course, this happened segment, and this is from one of our loyal Canadian listeners. Sent this to you, actually, Grant. Passed it on. Norway's prime minister caught playing Pokemon Go in Parliament. So, of course, that happened there in Norway. Norway's prime minister, Erna Solberg, was caught playing Pokemon Go during a parliamentary debate last Tuesday, according to the news report. Solberg, the leader of the Conservative Party, was photographed playing the popular game while her political opponent was speaking. So as her opponent was speaking, she was not interested, apparently, and began to play Pokemon Go. Was she embarrassed by this? Nay. She said, I think that the other speaker, Trine, will like that I opened the game while she was at the podium, Solberg wrote in a text message to the local paper. Grande herself attracted criticism from other lawmakers when she was caught playing the game in August during a defense hearing, according to the Norwegian broadcaster NRK. So both of these leaders have been caught playing Pokemon Go. So this may have been a little retribution.
Yeah, it seems like she may have opened the app on purpose when her opponent was speaking. But at the same time, that conservative leader is also obsessed with the game.
Yeah. They say the 55-year-old prime minister's fondness for the game is well documented. She took time out between meetings in Bratislava in August to hunt the little monsters. A week earlier, she had told the newspaper, Aftenposten, that she had reached level 14 in the game after abandoning Candy Crush to devote herself fully to Pokemon Go. You have to look at this one of two ways. Either what a waste, or, well, things must be going pretty good in that country if that's their big story. What are you playing now? I gave up Candy Crush. I'm on Pokemon Go.
Good point.
Carry on.
Actually, I was thinking I might have to make the sacrifice and just give a review of that game, play it for a day or two, and see what all the rage is about, because it's hard to understand from an outsider perspective. But who knows? If I ran 20 miles in one day playing that game and lost 20 pounds, I think it might be worth it.
Could be. It does get people moving around. They say some might argue that Solberg is only doing her patriotic duty, get this, the government pension fund. The government pension fund is invested in Nintendo.
Oh, right.
And the sovereign wealth fund has gotten a nice boost from the Pokemon Go craze, earning at least $148 million due to its popularity. I mean, that seems like a bad investment, but I guess they're making money. So, I don't know. Things must be really good in Norway, with all they're worried about is Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
I mean, other concerns.
I think they're actually one of those examples of a socialist country that has had some success. If I'm not mistaken, I believe they are one of those countries. And a lot of American socialists try to point to them as a reason why we should pursue that in this country, when the reality is almost everyone there is rich. So even when you spread the wealth around in a rich country, the rich people are just pretty much sharing the same amount of money with each other and still being rich.
You know, I saw one of these, I don't know, some sort of a debate where people were arguing about the best form of economic policy, government policy. And there was this young lady, I don't know, college student, maybe a little older. And she was really big on socialism. She thought it was great. But she was also very critical of the U.S. for not having more open immigration. And so the person I was debating with her said, so what do you think is the best solution? She said, oh, well, it's socialism. And he's like, well, what countries have you seen that work in? And she points to like some of these European countries. And he says, oh, you mean those countries that are, you know, like 98% one race, typically white European?
Yeah.
And so she was kind of stumped. Like, Oh, wait a second. Because what she was really heralding as the great beacon of hope for socialism flew in the face of her ideas on open immigration.
Yeah.
So can't have it both ways.
That is the reality. A lot of the time when immigrants come in, there aren't a whole lot of rich immigrants. So the rich would then be paying a lot to bring the level of the immigrants up. In the case of Norway or somewhere like that, where they're all 98% white European and already pretty well established, they're not losing as much money to bring up the poor.
Yeah. So it's... it was an interesting little debate. She kind of didn't know what to say after that. But of course that happened. Of course they're playing Pokemon Go over there. It sounds like paradise. The Kia David program coming up today on KPCG. One of these segments is on I Will Break the Pride of Your Power, which is, of course, a biblical prophecy about what you can see happening in the modern nations of Israel today. And we see that happening all the time. We see it in the U.S. presidential debates. You know, they do ask some tough questions. Well, what do you want to do about Syria? And the one thing that we don't want to do, I don't think either candidate really wants to do, is go fight, you know, to beat Russia back or to put an end to, you know, they keep talking about ISIS, but nobody's talking about really going after Iran. And I think ISIS is one of those things where it's kind of an easy target because everyone knows they're bad. And they're not super powerful in a national sense, though they cause a lot of havoc. And so it's kind of an easy thing to get tough about or to talk tough about. But, you know, you knock one leader out and five more pop up, it seems like, because you're not going back to the actual cause, which is Iran in the case of terrorism, mm-hmm. or, you know, the actual cause of some of these problems. You'd have to confront some really big national powers. And nobody wants to do that.
Yeah, it's hard to understand why that is so intimidating, it seems like, for a lot of our leaders, because clearly we have the power, we have everything needed to drive Russia out of there without much questioning at all, if we would just be firm enough about it. And Syria, I mean, take out Assad, you bomb ISIS until they don't exist anymore. There are a lot of things that we could do in places like that. And yeah, maybe taking out Assad would just bring another crazy leader in there, but not if we forcibly restored order and stayed there to make sure it was the way we want it to be.
Yep. So there's a lot of just weakness, and nobody wants to stand up and make a decision and be responsible, I guess, for a, a war. But the thing is, if you don't take action at some point, I mean, you allow these other nations to get stronger to the point where you can't deal with them anymore. Mm-hmm. We see more of that happening. So that's talked about on this Key of David program. I Will Break the Pride of Your Power. Make sure you listen for that. It's very important, especially for the times we're in. And that's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, today from Edstone, England. A few topics today. One of the main ones, of course, was on this the second U.S. presidential debate. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that here in a minute. But really an embarrassment in front of the world. Children basically throwing just some pretty grotesque insults at each other, and probably truth to all of it, but still, you know. And the thing that really, I guess, struck me about some of the stories that came out over the weekend, which are too disgusting to even really talk about, but in relation to some of the both of the candidates, is that you know, really, I think the hypocrisy of everyone's kind of on display, because even though one party or one person will point the finger at the other, well, they're all guilty. I mean, everybody's guilty. And that's, you know, when you look at the political establishment or you look at just even the people, how many people are guilty of some of the stuff they're talking about? A whole lot, without getting into any details. But people are guilty of it. So the hypocrisy is there at every turn. There is not a leader that is in the running right now in any serious way that can stand on any sort of moral high ground at all and say, well, look, you know, I'm trying to live the right way here. I'm trying to follow what God would lay out as a way to live. And now, of course, that would make people angry too to say that, right? But there's no one that can say that. And so here we are with everyone just kind of in this just this immorality, and it just is on display, full display in front of the entire world.
Right. Well, who would have been able to produce an incriminating videotape of George Washington if he were alive today? He wasn't involved in certain things in his personal life that could have been criticized and exposed in a race like this. And, you know, any of these other leaders who we've had in the past, you can't say terrible things about their spouses like you can about one of them either. So both sides have a clear, large amount of immorality to them. And that's just indicative of the state of the people today. This is a society where pretty much anything goes. And yet whenever it comes down to the presidential race, that's where we try to draw the line. And we try to erect these boundaries and say, well, you can't do this certain thing when most Americans are doing the exact same things that they are upset at the candidates for.
Yeah, the parts of the debate that I saw, of course, it was a town hall, so they could get up and ask questions. And one person got up and asked about, the economy and how are you going to solve the economy and things. And I thought, well, you know, really, that question should be asked back to that person. Well, what are you doing personally? Like, what's your personal economy like? Right? Everyone wants the government to somehow magically fix everything, but how can they fix everything? Even if they wanted to, which they're not going that direction. But whether it's the morality, whether it's anything, what about the people's personal lives? And that's the issue. But nobody wants to talk about that. You solve it in the government, but what about you personally? That's what made the United States. One of the things that made the United States strong was private morality, whether it be, you know, with your financial life, your, you know, marriage and family life. But when that is destroyed and is gone, well, we wouldn't even elect a leader that would actually live by those principles. They wouldn't even stand for it.
Yeah, that's true. And even in just the case of the economy, the average person who is upset about it today, you could easily ask, well, are you not thousands of dollars in debt yourself? Do you not spend more than you regularly earn? There are plenty of issues like that where you could turn it around on the people who are upset and ask the same questions. So if we cannot even do the things right in our individual lives, how can we expect some person to miraculously work it out for the entire country's sake?
Yeah, and that's, I think somebody even asked the question, like, how are you going to make sure the rich pay their fair share? Well, I think they already are taxed pretty highly. Now, there might be some that kind of manipulate the system. I don't know, but I don't know. I just thought about that person that asked that question. I'm like, well, what about you? You know, why you? It's just like that false straw man that everybody wants to blame. You know, how come your life's not what you want it to be? Well, it's because the rich people steal everything. Well, really? I mean, make them pay their fair share. What, do they owe you? Because of, in a lot of cases, their own hard work. Now, sure, there's issues of corruption, but a lot of people work hard and they've done well and they made some money. Why is that a bad thing? Why do they owe you for that? And that's kind of the mentality that a lot of people have, and it's heading the wrong direction.
Yeah, that statement, pay your fair share, is the most fraudulent statement. Pay your fair share means paying the same percentage, not having the rich pay 50% just because they have more money and the poor pay 5 or 10% or whatever. That's just a false argument. And it's also, that's another case where you can turn the question around and say, okay, well, if you were rich, would you want to be taxed 70 or 80% of your earnings when you have earned it, when you have started from the bottom, climbed to the top? Now you have that money. Are you willing to put yourself under the same amount of taxation as you are demanding of the rich right now.
I've seen that happen in some of these kind of debates too, where people are, you know, debating these topics, and that exact thing happened. This person was going on and on about the rich and they need to pay everything, and the person asked them, well, if you had all this, would you give it all away? And they were like, well, of course, you know, but right, it's easy to say, hard to do. And really, why should somebody? I mean, that as long as they're helping, and there's many examples of people that have quite a bit being pretty charitable, actually. And I just think that's sort of a, again, it's just passing the buck. It's everybody else's fault. You know, it's not my fault. It's the rich guy's fault. Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to have a nation that succeeds when that's the type of thinking. So a lot more about that debate coming up on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And make sure you do listen for that and get some good insight there. This is also in line with the debate subject. This is from the New York Post. A little more detail about it. Grant, you've got this article. Sharp jabs made for most explosive debate in decades. It's interesting they say in decades. I mean, really, ever, right? Has there ever been one that's been more, oh, wow. I mean, just, I hate to say, I hate to use the phrase, but below the belt as far as shots are concerned. You know, you almost have to give it an R rating. You got to send the kids out of the room.
That's right. And the article does go on to say it probably is the most contentious debate ever or election cycle ever. I'm just guessing this person didn't want to assume he knew everything about history and could say that for sure. But this article does just really point out how blunt and how direct last night's debate was. It said, this isn't politics, this is war, and it's personal. It went on to say, especially during the explosive first 25 minutes, the air was thick with rancor and even potential danger. Trump and Clinton don't just dislike each other, they actually seem to hate each other. And that is true. Even though they come out there onto stage to the applause and they're smiling at each other and they shake each other's hands when the debate ends, those two people do not like each other one bit.
No, and that's what's so dangerous about this whole situation is that somebody's got to win and somebody's got to lose, right? So the supporters of each seem to be so full of hate towards the other side. There's how are you going to come together after the election? You know, how is the media, which is clearly out against Donald Trump, how are they going to try to be, are they going to try to be fair if he gets elected? No, of course not. And even on the other side, are they going to be fair if she gets elected? No. They're going to play put their opinions out there and try to spin it. So it's really a volatile situation. And a lot of hate being stirred up and a lot of animosity. And no one's really thinking about the good of the country long term. It's just, I want to get in there at all costs and I'll take any shot. What do we got? Like a little less than a month until this election? So what else are people holding back that they're going to start dropping on each other? It just gets distasteful, to say the least.
It does. And I think I've heard some analysts say that kind of the Democrats have recently been using this tactic of calling people who disagree with them racists and bigots. And that is a pretty divisive way to debate. That is turning into the childish ad hominem attacks instead of talking about issues. But now they're just totally put on the back foot when they have a candidate on the other side who is willing to do the exact same thing back. I mean, the way Donald Trump blasted Hillary Clinton last night several times, he said if he was president, he'd put her in jail.
Yeah, that was pretty well, I don't even know if he could do it. Maybe he could, but that ups the game, doesn't it? That ups the stakes.
You better not lose now. Yeah.
I mean, I can't remember that ever happening. Maybe it has, and I just don't recall it. But in the U.S., as far as you see that in other countries, somebody's in power, somebody else comes in, they end up imprisoned or, you know, worse. But not in the United States. One thing that separated us from other nations is a peaceful transfer of power. And but this is getting to be pretty ugly, at least in terms of the words.
Yeah, that's right. And to be fair, she has been involved in a number of scandals, and he just basically was saying, you know, we're going to prosecute you fairly this time, unlike the way the Department of Justice was clearly in the tank for you, and so was the FBI. So he does want to continue this prosecution the right way in his mind. So there were a lot of blunt attacks last night. Again, Hillary Clinton was saying that he doesn't respect women and that he is stirring up hatred toward Muslims. So whenever both sides are saying, well, you hate large portions of the country, I don't think that can end very well.
No. No, how can it? How can it? And just a really, really heated debate there. And, you know, they're just pulling out all the punches, I guess. So there's one more coming up. If anyone can stand it, you know? But I don't know. I haven't seen the ratings. I guess they were good. Have you seen what they were?
I saw that the first one had 84 million viewers. I don't know if they've had time to calculate it yet for this one. Probably since it wasn't the first one, maybe not quite as much, but I would still guess around 70 million, something like that.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is. It's kind of like everything has become sort of a reality TV type of show, and this is almost one too. And, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the back and forth, but then you have to step back and think, okay, one of these people supposedly is going to lead the United States of America. That's nerve-wracking. Because when they do ask questions, and there were a few good questions about, like, well, what would you do with Syria? What would you do with some of these other ones? And in both cases, it was just either the political say-nothing rhetoric, you know, that doesn't mean anything, or very vicious attacks towards the other candidate. And you're at the end, you're sitting there going, okay, yeah, but what would you do, though?
Right.
Right? And so it's not a lot of answers there, but I think, you know, in fairness to the candidates, what is the solution? What are you going to do? Because no one wants to use any power.
Right.
So what can you do? Talk tough, but at the end of the day, you're not going to do anything.
Yeah, the will of the American people has really been crushed, too. I think that's a big reason why neither candidate can really say, well, we're going to go to war and crush our enemies, because the people are just sick of war, because we just haven't been winning the wars. The wars have been there for us to win, and yet we don't handle them the right way, and we know a lot of that is because of curses on this country. But the American people don't want to really deal with problems in the unpleasant way they need to be dealt with to actually solve them. So neither candidate can really exert much force, or he or she will go against the will of the people and not get elected.
Yeah, and a lot of that gets back to just the moral decay in the country. When there's moral decay, there is no will to fight. I mean, what are you fighting for? The will's broken, and that's what that Key of David program is about today, breaking the pride of the power, and that certainly has happened. It's on full display here on this debate. What did they think? Who do they think won the big blowout?
They think that Trump, at the very least, made it clear he wasn't dropping out of the race following a tape from 11 years ago where he said some inappropriate things about women. Some people were demanding that he drop out. He made it very clear that he wouldn't drop out last night. It says here that he went nuclear in a way that might be the boldest gambit in presidential campaign history. It was simultaneously an act of war against Clinton and the incestuous links between the Democratic Party and most major news organizations, including last night's moderators, who again favored Clinton. This time they were even less good at hiding their bias toward Clinton. Mm-hmm. They repeatedly were interrupting Donald Trump, and it almost got to the point where every time the moderators were talking, it was almost like, be quiet. You're completely only interrupting one person.
Yeah, I think a lot of people know it, and Donald Trump is pointing it out. One thing that they do that is always interesting, I've seen it in both debates, is that if a comment's made and that's sort of negative, I guess, towards Hillary Clinton, and the audience kind of has a little bit of a cheer or something, the moderator's like, oh, can we remember the rules now? Let's quiet it down. And then, but if it goes the other way, people are cheering, they don't bother to say anything.
True.
And I'm like, well, you know, come on now. Make if that is the rule, then make it the rule. If it's not, then don't. And so it gets to be kind of ridiculous with some of those things. But
Anderson Cooper at one point, when they were cheering for something Trump said, he even said that they're wasting everyone's time. He told the entire audience sitting directly behind him that they were wasting everyone's time, which that would that would be a little bit of a scary situation to put yourself in.
Well, you know, I saw just a little bit of a Sunday morning, one of those Sunday morning talk shows. They're talking about the debates and all this. And they brought out the point that, look, the media, and this was somebody that was in the media, they said, look, the media thinks they know better than everybody else, that they have the answer, they know how things should be, and they're going to tell you how it should be. So they're not, they don't report facts and say, okay, well, you see the story here. They think they know how it should be. And so they are pushing that opinion on everybody. And at some point, people tune that out. And I think if you look at the way people are starting to get their news a little more now, which is like Twitter and things like that, I think they're starting to tune it out because nobody wants to be lectured, you know, all day by somebody in the media who thinks they know everything about everything. You know, why don't you just report the facts? If the truth will come out, then report the truth. Why do you have to turn it to your way? I don't think people like that.
Right. I heard a lot of people after Hillary Clinton made that basket of deplorables comment, a lot of media members were proudly repeating that comment as if they wholeheartedly believed, of course, which is basically a grievous insult to, what, a quarter of the country?
Yeah.
To say that half of his supporters are a basket of deplorables. Irredeemable is another thing she called them.
Right.
And they're totally in line with that. They're going to really alienate a large portion of their potential audience that way.
Well, you think about that, just saying something like that, irredeemable, that's a God prerogative.
Yeah, it
is. To judge someone, their eternal you know, salvation or not, you're irredeemable. That was brought up last night.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of danced around it. And I know people say things and they don't really think about what they're saying to some extent, so I'm not going to be too critical there, but mm-hmm. But still, to say something like that, you are irredeemable. How can you then come together and support that candidate if they win, if they've said that about you? Mm-hmm. Again, that just highlights the fact that it's so divisive. I don't know how they're ever going to come back together. I think Stephen Fleury even pointed out on the Trumpet Daily Radio show, the United States of America? I mean, the world doesn't see it that way because we're not united.
That's true, and it is. In a way, it's shocking to hear either side claim the moral high ground, especially the lawless radical left in this country, saying that certain parts of the people are irredeemable just because they don't believe what the radical left does. We have seen repeatedly that entire side is anti-America. They've been infiltrated by the enemy. And for them to call people who don't agree with that irredeemable, that probably includes us, even though we're not Trump supporters. It includes most people who do not go along with the narrative being pushed that, conservative Christians are the biggest enemy in the country. That's one of the things that they say.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny thing to even say, to call somebody irredeemable if you don't purport to believe in God. Well, what are you, irredeemable for what? From what? To what?
I mean, exactly.
What, you know, you're just living in this world of your own creation. I guess really what is meant is there is that, you know, you better think like us or else, and that gets to be extremely dangerous. So sadly, there will be one more debate, I guess, and that'll be coming up here in, I guess, the next couple of weeks or so. I'm not sure on the exact date there, but
I think it's the 19th, I'm 19th, pretty sure.
Okay. Yeah. New York Post, sharp jabs made for most explosive debate in decades. One last little story here. Over the weekend, again, more police were shot. Man who killed two Palm Springs officers had body armor and gun magazines, officials say. This guy's name is John Felix. He's 26. They did catch him. He is in jail at this time. He said he wanted to kill the police. They showed up for a domestic dispute of some kind, and he had told his father that he was hoping to kill police, and so he did. Two of them, including a young lady who had just given birth 4 months ago.
That's just terrible. Does it explain much else about him?
Well, he's a gang member.
Okay.
He is a known gang member. He has been in and out of prison. He has had problems before. He spent 4 years in prison for a 2009 attempted murder plot. He was arrested in 2013 after fighting with police at the same home where Saturday's shooting took place. And they're still looking into it, so they're not... don't have all the details yet, but the two officers that were killed, the lady, again, she was in her 20s. She was on maternity leave because she just had a baby 4 months ago. And the man that was killed was in his 60s. The officer, he was pretty close to retirement. He'd served for many, many years. He was working overtime. He didn't even have to work. He decided to work overtime. And this gang member, John Felix, decided he'd kill them. So there you go, Palm Springs. I've been out there. That's a nice, I guess, enough area, depending on where you are. But it's always interesting when it happens someplace that you've been to recently or you spent time at, and you think, really, wow. So, but it's interesting because that is the 67th officer that has died in the line of duty this year. And as of July the 20th, there's been an increase over the 62 officers killed in the same period last year. That's their mid-year report. The troubling increase in some of those deaths occurring in ambush attacks, and I guess this would be considered the same.
Yeah, there has been yet to be evidence of police carrying out a premeditated attack. It'd be interesting to see side by side the number of police officers killed versus maybe the number of black men or the number of criminals even killed, because it's not always one race, but for sure what we see is the police being specifically targeted. We don't see it the other way around.
Yeah, so bad situation out there, and that community is quite, you know, reeling quite a bit from something like that. They haven't had too many of those in the Palm Springs area. I think the last one was in the 60s, so it's been quite a while. But obviously, if you look at it nationally, there's getting to be more of these situations happening. So a bad deal there. And if you read the story and you look at the way the police went above and beyond to try to talk him out of the house, and he ends up killing two of the officers. And then, you know, as soon as an officer pulls a trigger on somebody, everyone's so up in arms about it. Well, they put their lives on the line, and in this case, get killed. You know, that's probably a father and a grandfather and a young mother, a four-month-old baby at home. There's no mom anymore, thanks to this guy. Terrible.
And think about it. He probably didn't know a thing about the people he killed.
Nah, I don't think he did.
Just because they uphold the law and someone else happened to be nearby, he killed them.
Yeah, terrible situation. So hopefully people will have a little courtesy, respect towards the police. I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people do. I think the majority probably does. I think
it's just the silent majority.
It's just
they call
a very loud minority, and I think it's a small group that are beating the drum the other way. Mm-hmm. But really sad situation out there in Palm Springs over the weekend. That'll do it for us on today's edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and also Just the Best Literature and Music for Life coming up today here on KPCG. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Monday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.